Welcome to the DLEI FinTech Conclave 2023 podcast series brought to you by the Digital Lenders Association of India and India FinTech Diaries. In today's episode, we discuss data protection and privacy and what the recent and the impending regulations in this space mean for FinTech. To discuss this, we have with us Supratim Chakrabarty, partner at Khaitan & Co. Supratim leads the privacy and data protection practice of Khaitan & Co., a premier Indian law firm. He is considered a thought leader in this space and has advised eminent clients in relation to information technology laws in India, including on data privacy, cybersecurity, and internet intermediaries related issues. Supratim is very active in the technology related policy space as well. He was amongst the select few individuals in the country from whom the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology had specifically sought additional comments on aspects pertaining to the erstwhile draft personal data protection. Also joining us is Prashant Ramdas, also a partner at Khaitan & Co. He is a partner in the Financial, Regulatory and Banking and Finance Practice Groups in the Bengaluru office of Khaitan & Co. He advises a variety of fintech clients engaged in digital lending, payments, wealth tech, insurtech, as well as cryptocurrency and digital assets. He specializes in financial and regulatory advisory, including providing strategic and regulatory advice on India entry, obtaining regulatory licenses approvals, liaising with regulators, and analyzing new fintech product structures and operational processes from a financial, regulatory, and compliance perspective. I'm your host, Elroy Saram, and this is India FinTech Diaries. Welcome back to India FinTech Diaries, a show where we discuss all things Indian fintech. Continuing our series with the Digital Lenders Association of India, today we turn our focus to data protection and security. With rising digital adoption in India, data protection and security have taken center stage and become a boardroom agenda for every financial services firm. And to help us make sense of the labyrinth of data protection and security laws and regulations that we have with us today, we have Supratim Chakrabarty and Prashant Ramdas, partners at Khaitan & Co. Welcome to the show, Supratim and Prashant.
Thank you. Thanks, Arun.
Thanks, Arun.
To begin off, let's do a quick round of introductions, Supratim and Prashant. For the sake of our listeners, maybe you could quickly give an overview of your backgrounds. Maybe Supratim, you can go first.
Right. Thanks, Elroy. So I am a corporate commercial partner at Khaitan & Company, had been doing mergers and acquisitions. Right from my student days, I was very interested in technology and data. And, you know, that is where, you know, I started this as a proper practice, along with my M&A and corporate practice. And the interest grew. And now, you know, we have been working not only in the general space of data privacy and protection, but also in the digital lending space, quite focused manner.
So I'm a partner from the Bangalore office at Khaitan, and I focus on financial regulatory practice and debt financing. We advise a lot of fintech clients engaged in digital lending, payments, wealth tech, insurtech, as well as crypto and virtual digital assets. And then we kind of focus on financial regulatory advisory and providing specific kind of advice on product structuring, India entry, licensing, and data as well. Fintech has been a growing sector over the last few years, and we kind of it's an exciting time for us to kind of be involved in the space and analyze various business models and advise clients on regulatory compliance aspects.
Supratim, we keep hearing different words like data protection, privacy, security, etc. And many of them end up being used very interchangeably. But I'm sure from a legal standpoint, the specific meanings of these words are somewhat different. Is there a framework that our listeners can use to think about data protection and security?
Right. Excellent question, Elroy. Let me give a simple example probably. And that is a very layman-ish example that I'm going to provide. So that not only, you know, people who are technically sound, but otherwise also everyone on the floor can understand. When we look into a room which has got, say, a glass door or a glass window, and you can see what is there inside, that'll be probably a breach of your privacy. But if you can break that glass door or glass window and get into the room, that'll be breach of your protection. I hope you have been able to simply explain that, yeah.
Prashant, RBI has been very proactive when it comes to data protection and security with regulations such as data localization, tokenization, e-mandate for recurring transactions, and digital lending guidelines. Help us understand the implications of these for fintech, especially the recent digital lending guidelines that came out.
Yeah, so I think RBI has been very, very protective of, you know, the data, financial data and payments data of Indian citizens, right? Right from 2018 when the payments data localization, you know, circular had come out, even though there was widespread lobbying with the RBI to kind of relax the strict requirements of data localization. RBI has always, you know, maintained its stance that there are a lot of instances of data leaks, you know, where Indian citizens' payments data, card data, etc., is at risk. So RBI specifically wanted to ensure that, you know, whatever data breach incidents occur, they have kind of the visibility to kind of investigate, you know, those issues within the territory of India. And hence, you know, for sensitive data, RBI has always been clear that, you know, all the data must only reside in India. And that's obviously from the perspective of protecting the data of the citizens of India and ensuring that as a regulator, we kind of give very not too much leeway for, you know, for any risk to that data. From a digital lending perspective, I think the working group which the RBI had set up to kind of study the digital lending industry had kind of unequivocally kind of mentioned in its report about the various practices which fintech companies were adopting, you know, while collecting customer data to underwrite and then provide loans to customers. And generally, you know, the theme of the working group report was that while India obviously had with its minimum data protection regulations under the IT Act, etc., the working group had specifically highlighted how fintech companies, you know, collect all sorts of data from customers, even if it is not really required for them to provide the financial services which they were saying they would provide. And also instances where the data was being misused, especially in the context of, you know, recovery and collection processes where customers were kind of being harassed using, you know, phone data, etc. So obviously, I think the working group had recommended to the RBI that a separate set of data protection norms should apply for the financial services and digital lending industry, given the higher risk in terms of misuse of the data, which would affect, you know, the larger customer base, right? So I think the RBI in its current kind of digital lending guidelines has gone into specifically the data protection and information security framework, which digital lending applications and lenders who lend to, you know, or through these digital lending platforms must maintain. And they've kind of been, again, fairly strict to ensure that the consent-based framework and only need-to-know basis data is collected and mobile phone data, etc., is not collected on an ongoing basis.
I just wanted to add in, you know, I just wanted to throw some light from an overall perspective of data localization, as Prashant was mentioning. You know, there are a couple of theories which are generally sort of used, thought of when you look at localization.
Right.
One is the trade theory, which is basically my data, my oil, and I want to use it the way I want to. The other one is the security theory, which is safety of the data, and the data, the relevant information should be available to our law enforcement authorities, etc., whenever they are required, things like those. So if you look at it, presently, in the Indian context, it's the latter. And in sector-specific areas, like the Reserve Bank of India giving its diktat for data localization, it's very clear that they want this data to be more secure, okay? And that is probably what is, you know, been playing in their minds. Interestingly, the twist is with this new Digital Personal Data Protection Bill, where they are talking about whitelisting of certain jurisdictions and stating that the data can freely go to such jurisdictions which are whitelisted by the government. We'll have to see how this plays out, but I happen to speak with the relevant ministry, and a very interesting note came through when they say that, listen, today sector-specific regulators are stating what they have to state in the absence of a specific regulation, which is the mother umbrella legislation on data protection. But right. Once this mother umbrella legislation is ready, probably we will take a stock holistically as to which all regulator has authority to state what in relation to data privacy and protection. My personal take is that the authority of regulators such as Reserve Bank of India would continue, and they would give the specifics But the overarching principles would be set to a particular standard through a general legislation like the Digital Personal Data Protection Bill.
When you said whitelisting, Supratim, is this very similar to the provisions under GDPR, specifically with regard to the EU and the US?
Yeah, so now this is a very interesting question. You know, when you look at GDPR, there are things like standard contractual clauses, you'll have BCRs, right, and things like
right,
those.
So, right.
So that is presently not enunciated in that manner in the present version of the bill. Of course, the Digital Personal Data Protection Bill is a principles-based draft right now, and they have called out certain thumb rules. The specifics are to be further, you know, enunciated through rules or otherwise. But I personally believe that probably some more granularity should be brought in this bill itself in the context of cross-border data transfer. You know, for example, you can have whitelisted jurisdictions. But what happens to students who are going to study abroad? Will right. they choose only those jurisdictions which are whitelisted? Tourists, for example. Will they only go to the whitelisted jurisdiction? The answer is no. So probably it's about time that we also understand those additional requirements that would be there and bring that on along with the whitelisting concept that is there today.
Supratim, just to give us listeners a sense of the key provisions of the draft data protection bill, maybe you could quickly give us like a 30,000 feet view of yeah. some of the key highlights of that bill.
Right. So I think a succinctly curated draft, it is largely principles based, like I was mentioning. It covers right. only digital personal data. So no physical data is covered under the purview of this bill. Also, no non-personal data. Thankfully, you know, I think some of the earlier versions, there was a thought process that non-personal data would also be covered, not there in this particular bill. It is, again, thought to be largely business-friendly whilst there is an attempt to protect the personal data of individuals. Of course, there are certain tweaks and refinements required for which I'm sure players have already given their inputs or feedback. There's a criticism on a lot of delegated legislation being there, but probably that is by design, because if you have to keep it light, then a lot of it would go in the rulemaking where the specifics would be called. I'm not getting into the other criticism of government exemptions, etc. Also, there are certain very interesting nuances which are being sort of brought about through this bill, like the classification of data controller, which are called data fiduciaries, into
right.
data fiduciary and significant data fiduciary. So there is enough amount of data crunching, etc., significant. They could be categorized as a higher threshold data controller called significant data fiduciary. And they will have additional obligations. There's also a very interesting concept of deemed consent, okay, which has been, right. I think, in the news for and probably in the negative sense. But if you ask me honestly, consent is just one ground of processing. You would need other grounds of processing as well. Let me give you a simple example. When we have employee investigation today, if you read the black letter of the law under the IT Act and the sensitive personal data rules, you will actually have to go to that individual employee and take consent that I'm going to look into the laptop if there is any sensitive personal data, you know, we might access whatever, all of those. So, but that is in a bad day, a very, very bad choice to have, right? And therefore, there are other grounds required. For one of them could be employment. Okay. Right. In an emergency situation where you have to take a patient to, say, an OT, you would not be taking consent that time. So it's very clear that there are other grounds required. And that has been enunciated through the concept of deemed consent. Okay. And the other important aspects which I would like to talk about is there is no categorization of personal data into sensitive personal data or critical personal data. Like also we mentioned, there is no data localization, so to say, but the way it has been mentioned is that transfer of personal data could take place to pre-approved or whitelisted jurisdictions. There is no criminal sanction, thankfully, but there are very high financial penalties. It can go up to 500 crores and Indian rupee, which could be quite significant. But there is a grade provided where basically depending on certain criteria, you reach that high number. there is no materiality-based threshold which has been provided for data breach report, which I think is a bit of a negative, because then any and every kind of data breach would be required to be reported to the data protection board and also to the data principals. Okay. There is a mention about handling of children's personal data. As you know, in the Indian construct, the age of consent is 18 years. And it has been told that there is no targeted advertisement possible or tracking or monitoring of children, etc., which is a bit of a negative for certain industries, and some fine-tuning has been requested, I'm aware, by such players. There's some positives also, I think, like alternate dispute resolution has been specifically called out in the... A voluntary undertaking can be taken from certain players, and not everything needs to go up to, you know, litigation and, you know, right up to the final stage of appeal. And one final thing is data subjects or data principals, as they are called under the bill, not only have rights like under GDPR, etc., they also have certain duties. And if they falter, there could be penalty of rupees 10,000.
That's some really interesting points that you brought up, Supratim. And that actually brings me to the next question I had. Kaitan & Co., which is your firm that you represent, and DLAI also launched a white paper titled Interplay Between Data Protection and Lending at the recently concluded DLAI FinTech Conclave 2023. Prashant, this question is for you. Can you take us through the highlights of this white paper?
Sure, Elroy. So I think the white paper was something which we had conceptualized along with the knowledge committee members of DLAI.
Right.
And you know, given that the data protection bill also, you know, came only a few months ago, and the digital lending guidelines also recently introduced, you know, we thought we will kind of do an in-depth study of how this is really affecting, you know, the digital lending industry and the fintechs operating in this industry. And, you know, what we have tried to kind of do is to kind of look into the, you know, the historical growth of, you know, the industry, look into how the government has kind of encouraged the digital delivery of financial services through India Stack and through, you know, the concept of paperless, presenceless delivery of financial services, which has really boosted, you know, the entire industry and provided a great platform for fintechs to innovate and provide digital services through this. And we've kind of looked into how data is a critical kind of tool in the overall process, given that a lot of this is kind of geared towards providing services to the, given the demographic dividend in India, and right, given the increasing kind of smartphone usage, internet consumption in India, there is so much unserved sector where, you know, where financial inclusion will play a key role, you know, going forward. So we've kind of discussed these aspects and then really called out for, you know, a requirement to have a uniform framework for treating financial data in India, because currently, obviously, the new bill is something which is proposed, and RBI as a sectoral regulator, you know, has also kind of legislated and come out with circulars which talk about how, you know, certain types of data must be treated. So end of the day, we've spoken about how, you know, there is a need, you know, for some broad guardrails which the industry has to adopt, you know, with respect to processing of financial data, and keep the parameters which kind of are relevant in that sense, and how, you know, there are various inconsistencies, say, even between the data protection bill and the digital lending guidelines, which ultimately would lead to more ambiguities in understanding and implementing the regulatory framework. And hence, you know, there is a clear need for us to kind of harmonize the various data-related legislations and have a uniform set of, you know, guidelines which would help provide a best-in-class, you know, data processing framework for the industry as a whole. You know, given that data is a key tool for lenders to underwrite customers and essentially grow, you know, in the coming years, right? Given the goals of financial inclusion, which RBI has clearly outlined, it's important that for financial data, there should be a single data protection framework, you know, governing financial data, which can actually kind of trigger the next phase of growth, you know, in the industry and help India achieve its financial inclusion goals.
Interesting thoughts there, Prashant, and that looks like a very interesting white paper to read. I have a final parting thought for each of you, right? Considering that the increasing focus of the government and regulators has been on data protection and security of late, what is the approach that fintech should take from a principles-based or a framework-based approach to ensure compliance? Maybe each of you could share your views on this, on the approach that fintech should start considering.
Right, right. Yeah, so I was essentially saying that, you know, obviously in the industry, you have different types of entities operating in the fintech space. You know, those industry players who are directly licensed with the RBI must obviously be more careful in terms of compliance, given that you know, they are subject to the direct regulatory supervision of the RBI. And RBI has now also specifically come out with various requirements relating to data collection, processing, storage, right? So, for example, in the digital lending context, you know, RBI has been very clear that you have to get explicit consent of the customers before, you know, collecting their data, and you have to be fully transparent at each stage when you collect the data as to why you're using the data. RBI has also restricted access to mobile phone resources of customers, except for, you know, one time at the onboarding stage to kind of complete our KYC verification process. I think all these stipulations are, you know, while the RBI has obviously kind of come out with it at the backdrop of the working group report on digital lending, these are requirements which should be strictly complied with, you know, given that the RBI would kind of look at compliance aspects, and you should be in a position to demonstrate compliance by having a clear audit trail to show and demonstrate that, you know, you are compliant both in letter and spirit. So with respect to, again, the treatment and the interplay between, you know, how regulated entities and other unregulated players, you know, work together and operate in the industry, given that obviously access to capital is available only with the regulated lenders. But there is a large group of unregulated fintech players who kind of drive innovation and growth in the industry and have access to the consumer base and provide innovative platforms with user interface, which helps consumers access the various financial services. So those unregulated fintech players, you know, must also kind of look at, you know, what are the stipulations under their contractual arrangements with regulated entities to ensure that, you know, they are in a position to comply with the requirements which the regulated counterparts impose on them, so as to, you know, ensure that their terms, operational processes, the various platforms which they operate are, you know, compliant with the requirements which the RBI has brought out, because eventually the regulated players will pass on the compliance obligations to the unregulated platforms. And it's crucial for them to also kind of be ahead of the curve and ensure full compliance. In terms of, you know, the data protection bill itself, you know, I think we've had this discussion earlier as well, because I think, Supro, this is the fourth version of the bill which has come out. And at each version which comes out, clients do ask us, you know, what do we need to do right now to be ahead of the curve and comply with what is going to come out. And at each time, I think the, you know, the bill is getting revised and changed. So I'm not sure whether clients generally should look at changing, you know, their current kind of model, or implementing at least internal processes to monitor and set up, you know, compliance in the anticipation that the bill will be passed into law in the coming months.
Right. I think excellent point, Prashant. I'll take it on from there. And let me give a little more broad-brushed approach to the question, okay? The global gold standards, to my mind, have already been etched, okay, through GDPR, etc. So whatever we are talking about through various iterations of the bill and what is coming up, plus what the sector regulator like the Reserve Bank of India is talking about, is not very different from, say, a GDPR standard. So my suggestion would be that if you would really want to be ahead of the curve and not be too worried about what is changing every day, as in with or without the new bill, it would be the global gold standards which are already there. Okay. And that is in relation to privacy notice, the evidence in relation to, you know, consent that is being taken, etc., etc. All these are pretty much standard globally by. Now, let us talk about a bit of a delta which has been created by this new bill. And I'm going to tell you in a manner where you'll realize that it is nothing where, you know, which you should not be doing even otherwise. Okay. Evidence to be kept for consent and notices. It has been called out in the bill, because in a bad day, you'll have to actually produce evidence to show that you had actually given notice or taken consent. Similarly, a mechanism to say, I accept and I decline in the same manner. It cannot be so that I accept appears right on top and, you know, your right to withdraw or decline is lost somewhere where someone cannot find it out. It's pretty standard.
Yep.
Right. Then the other thing is, you know, data principles, right? Like right of erasure, you know, or give effect to all other rights of a data principle or data or a data subject. That should anyways be clearly available. You need to have valid contracts between data controller and a co-data controller, a data controller and data processor. All these are pretty much standard by. Let me talk about few of these standard items which you probably could start looking into. One of them is a data protection officer. You can call that person by any other name today. But if under the bill, if you are categorized as a significant data fiduciary in future, probably you need to have that data protection officer who takes care of the requirements pertaining to data. Again, I don't think it is a massive requirement or something that you would not be able to have from within your office. An absolute different item, which probably is not there today, but you need to start looking into in a very intense manner, is the requirement to translate your privacy notices and consents in all the languages that are given in the 8th schedule of the Indian Constitution. Now, this is a new requirement, which I think is a very favorite one for the government. We have tried to see if this can be diluted, made optional, etc., but probably that is not going to happen. So one can start looking into converting all of the notices and consents slowly into other languages that are specified in the 8th schedule of the Constitution. That could come in handy very soon when this particular digital personal data protection bill actually becomes a law.
Very interesting thoughts. It is great speaking with you both, Supratim and Prashant. Thanks a ton for joining us today. It was a pleasure hosting you on the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Our pleasure.
Thanks, Alroy. Thank you.
Just a quick parting question to both of you. In case any of our listeners wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do this?
Right. So we are available on our email IDs. It'll be shuprutim.chakraborty@khaitanco.com. And for Prashant, it would be prashant.ramdas@khaitanco.com. And anyways, you can connect with us over LinkedIn.
Excellent. I'll include those details in the show notes. That's it from India FinTech Diaries this week. Stay tuned, as in our upcoming episode, we'll give you a summary of what transpired at the recent DLAI FinTech Conclave 2023. And until next time, stay safe.